You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody.
Hey, Maggie.
How you doing, Matt?
Nice to see you.
Folks, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday. Got a great guest to kick it off. And I want to get right into it because this gentleman helps feed our state's hungry folks. And it appears that that work is going to get both more difficult and at the same time, more important as we move forward. His name is Matt King. He is the CEO of the Hunger Task Force. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Matt. Thank you so much for making time. Matt, can you
hear?
Now I can hear you, Maggie.
Wonderful. Thanks
so much. Thanks so much
for making time. I wanted to get right into what does the Hunger Task Force do? All right, we're going to try this again, folks. If you can hear me, we're going to give Matt a call back and see if we can get him on the lines. I'm going to give Matt the number 855-752-4842. Why don't you just give us a buzz, Matt, and we'll bring him on. As we work to get Matt on the line here, I want to tell you a little bit about the Hunger Task Force of Milwaukee. It is one of the organizations that provides completely free local food bank. It is Wisconsin's number one leading anti-hunger organization. Now, here's what is making their work much harder and, frankly, where you might come in. We have learned that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has halted $500 million in deliveries to food banks. And I just want us to absorb that fact. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has halted $500 million in deliveries. Matt, I think we've got you now. Am I getting that correct, that the federal government has decided let's not feed hungry people? Do we have Matt on the phones? I don't think we do. I'm going to just keep going here. Let me know when you do if we've got Matt on the phones. Yeah, so those are the facts as we know them today, that the USDA has halted $500 million in deliveries to food banks nationwide. That particular slug of money came from the USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation, which provides resources to purchase food from American farmers. You know, like family farms in the state of Wisconsin, as well as American ranchers, and sends it to emergency food providers like the Hunger Task Force. Now, these canceled deliveries, the canceled funding here, is going to have a big impact on food security for folks here in Wisconsin. The phase two orders made by the Wisconsin Department of Health and Human Services have been canceled. So like the Wisconsin apparatus, because of these funding cuts, have been canceled. I think we've got Matt now. Matt, you there? Can you hear me? Still don't have Matt, so I'm going to keep going. These orders that in the state of Wisconsin, our Department of Health and Human Services was supposed to facilitate in with our segment or our chunk of that $500 million was supposed to start occurring from June until September. In other words, coming up here. It was about $2.2 million worth of healthy foods for the entire state of Wisconsin. So while the Hunger Task Force is located in southeastern Wisconsin, that $2.2 million worth of healthy foods helps feed the entire state. Items that we have now had to cancel include milk, eggs, cheese, bread, and it's really essential, if not existential, for the Hunger Task Force. This means the cancellation of truckloads, literally truckloads of chicken, cheese, milk, eggs, turkey breast, chicken legs, pulled pork, pork chops. This is 302 pounds of food valued at $615,000, which is a little bit more than 25% of the state's total canceled funds, which the Trump administration has said, hey, let's not worry about feeding those hungry people. And that's having real impacts here in the state of Wisconsin. On a personal level, I wanted to share with everybody that I have known a number of classmates of mine growing up in the southeastern Wisconsin area whose families primarily got their food from the Hunger Task Force. I knew a couple of girlfriends of mine in high school. Their families frequented the food pantries run by the Hunger Task Force. And I had a friend in college who was self-financing college on loans and jobs, many jobs. And she went to the Hunger Task Force to get her food while she was attending Marquette University with me. So it is really an absolute essential service that we have here in southeastern Wisconsin and across the state. It's the only food bank located in Milwaukee that doesn't charge for food, for the delivery of food, or for network membership. And they make a special effort to make sure that the food is nutritious, that there is fresh vegetables and fruits. So it is again, incredibly important across the state. I also wanted to share this little personal story with each and every one of you, which doesn't relate to the funding cuts, but many moons ago, I was stuck in New York's LaGuardia Airport. Stick with me here, folks. I'll bring it back around to the Hunger Task Force in just a minute. I was stuck in LaGuardia Airport. There was a bit of weather that came through. Basically, every flight out of LGA was canceled. And it left me and a bunch of other travelers just stuck there. Like, what are we going to do? So I was trying to figure that out, moseyed my way down to the car rental area, got in one of the very long lines, was trying to call on my BlackBerry. That tells you how old I am using the BlackBerry. Tried to give a phone call into a couple of the rental agencies, but basically all the cars got rented out nearly immediately. And so I looked around. I had to get back to Wisconsin. I was having a pretty important surgery with a surgeon that was really familiar with me. The surgery was the next day. Long story made short, I noticed a man in a Packers sweatshirt. Seemed like a nice enough guy. Also in the car rental line. He had keys. He was just waiting to get through and pick his vehicle out. And so I just walked up to him and I said, are you by any chance heading back to the state of Wisconsin, my friend? Oh, yes, I'm from Milwaukee. And he offered to have me drive with him back to Wisconsin. I had never met this guy. Of course, I had to then awkwardly ask, I need to see your driver's license and take a photo of this, and I need to share your specific information with my friends and family in Wisconsin so I do not get kidnapped And he chuckled and said, that's fine. And so I offered to drive some of the way. He refused. He let me go ahead and take a long sleep, got a good night's sleep. He did all of the driving. He, in fact, did not need to go all the way to Milwaukee. He only needed to go to Racine, drove me all the way back to Milwaukee. And before I got out of the car with this wonderful man some 20 years ago now, we got to talking about what we did. And that man worked for the Hunger Task Force in Wisconsin. And so I have a wonderful bit of affinity for this organization. We're going to put the website of the Hunger Task Force in our show notes for today. It's hungertaskforce.org. That's hungertaskforce.org. Go check it out. If you want to get involved, donate some of your time, work at one of their food banks, donate food. You can check all of that out. In the spirit of this Easter and Passover weekend, if we think a little bit more about what we might do to serve our community, and our neighbors, friends, and family, I think that would be to the benefit of us all. We're going to get Matt screened, hopefully, for a different time to join us since we couldn't quite get him here this afternoon. And I know he's got a full schedule. We do as well here on the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon. Of course, as you all know, we've got Ask Maggie at 3 o'clock. Terry Barr, my colleague, is going to join me at 3:30 for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. That will be hopefully some good news. I also got to remind all of you that we've got our new lineup starting next Wednesday. We got Pat Kreitlow kicking off Mornings with Pat Kreitlow from 6 to 9 a.m. Matt Nair on air with Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach moved up a little bit earlier. They're going to now be on from 9 to 11. We got Tom Hartman joining us from 11 to 2. Todd's going to be, my good friend Todd Albo's going to be in this slot starting next Wednesday. And then I will be your friend and host. And I don't know, give you some guideposts through the craziness that is American politics these days in the drive time slot starting next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. But folks, what we're going to dive into next is incredibly important. It is a discussion of what I will call the single most concerning judicial decision I have read, other than the Supreme Court's ruling declaring that, yep, we've got kings here, not just presidents. I'm going to break that down for you. Why I think it's so important and why I think every single American should take a read. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to give it another try this afternoon. Hope you're having a good Friday wherever you are. The hail. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if it was as intense where you are as it was for me. I was very thankful to have my car in a garage as some pretty significant hail came down. I hope you all are safe out there. And now it's like 70 degrees outside in southeastern Wisconsin. So as per usual, if you don't like the weather in Wisconsin, wait 5 minutes. It will change. Guys, I can hear you on the mics. So what I wanted to get to this afternoon is a discussion of the decision by J. Harvey Wilkinson, who is the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals judge that issued a decision late yesterday afternoon in the Kilmer Abrego Garcia case. And the judge issued the decision because the White House had requested that the appeals court prevent the trial court judge from conducting discovery regarding the administration's efforts to, or lack thereof, comply with the Supreme Court's ruling that said that Mr. Garcia should get the benefit of the facilitation of his return from El Salvador, that the administration needs to facilitate his return. And the White House is basically, and the administration have basically done nothing. They say they're facilitating, but that facilitating can basically mean doing nothing. That's the root of their argument. And earlier today, Donald Trump, with RFK Jr. standing next to him and Dr. Oz, announced that Mr. Garcia is not coming back. Not coming back. I'm going to ask each and every one of you out there, how in the heck is that complying with the Supreme Court's order? I don't understand. And we're going to post in our show notes from today a link to the merely 7-page order that was issued by Judge Wilkinson on the Fourth Circuit that said, no, we're not going to prevent the district court from doing their job. And their job is to ensure that you, the administration, is following the Supreme Court order. We're not going to get involved in that. And you need to do what the district court judge is saying. So I spent some time, I have read this decision about 4 times now. And what I did for each and every one of you is group together what I think are the three predominantly major chunks of this decision. And I'm going to share those with you because I think every American needs to understand what Judge Wilkinson just told the Trump administration. And given that Donald Trump in the White House today said Mr. Garcia is not coming back, I think the president just committed contempt of court. And one of the most important things to note here is that Judge Harvey Wilkinson is one of the most conservative Republican judges sitting on the federal bench today. One of the most conservative Republicans sitting in the federal court system today. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan. George W. Bush considered promoting him, elevating him to the Supreme Court, though he didn't end up going in that direction. This man is 80 years old. And just like Judge Boasberg, who was a roommate of Judge Kavanaugh, who is, by every account, one of an extraordinarily conservative, not just jurist, but a conservative, a Federalist Society guy, a Republican. The fact that it is these judges, these Republicans, these very, very, very conservative judges that are now sounding the alarm and saying unequivocally that what the administration is doing is not just illegal, not just unconstitutional, but fundamentally incompatible with American values. That's what Judge Wilkinson, that's what Judge Boasberg are saying. Now, here's a little background on Judge Wilkinson, and then we'll take care of some business, and then I want to get into the decision itself. He attended the University of Virginia. He served 2 years in the Army in the height of the Vietnam War. After a year of law school, he took a break, ran for Congress as a Republican, lost the race, and then finished law school. He was a clerk to Supreme Court Justice Powell. He worked as a law professor, and he served in top positions in the Justice Department. This man has spent more than 40 years on the appeals court. And no one can question his credentials as a Republican and as a conservative. So when we come back, I'm going to give you the three blocks, the three building blocks of this very short decision that Judge Wilkinson issued yesterday. And I'm going to tell you why I think the language is compelling and ultimately indisputably clear that we are approaching the abyss. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're going to want to keep it locked. We'll be right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a brand new lineup coming for you next Wednesday. You're going to want to check that out. Really excited to be moving to the drive time slot. You'll be able to find me from 4 to 6 p.m. starting next Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, regular schedule. You'll find me from 2 to 4 p.m. across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. We're talking about the decision rendered yesterday by Republican conservative jurist Harvey Wilkinson. He has criticized Roe v. Wade. He's criticized courts' intervention in matters where they overrode laws adopted by legislatures. He has advocated for the executive branches, the president's authority to capture, quote, capture those who take up arms against the United States, writing that following the September 11th attacks. If you doubt my statement that this guy is a Republican, capital R, frankly, capital all the way, all caps, Republican, take 5 minutes and Google him. That's who we got in this case. It is that judge that wrote the decision issued yesterday that said, no, Mr. Trump and the Trump administration, you're not going to be able to stop a district court judge from asking you to produce facts, documents, and sit for depositions to show what you're doing to comply with the Supreme Court's unequivocally clear order that you have to facilitate the return of Abrego Garcia because you violated his constitutional right to due process. So I'm going to save what I think is the meatiest, the most important portion of that decision for last. But I want to actually start with the fact that Judge Wilkinson went so far in the decision, which I have never seen in another written appeals court decision, to address the criticisms being leveled against the courts, Judge Innes in this case, Judge Boasberg, depending on who you're talking to, and sort of this moment that we find ourselves in. So here's what he had to say. I don't like reading, but when someone has written something that is more persuasive than what my summary could possibly be. I'm just going to read the original, what he wrote. So again, this is yesterday's decision. A Republican, very conservative judge telling the Trump administration, no, you're going to comply with the lower court's directions and discovery to find out what you're doing to facilitate the return of Mr. Abrego Garcia. Wrote this: the government is obviously frustrated and displeased with the rulings of the court. Let one thing be clear: court rulings are not above criticism. Criticism keeps us on our toes and helps us do a better job. Court rulings can overstep. And remember what I just told you about Roe v. Wade and some of his other decisions? He has criticized throughout his career judicial overreach, activist judging, right? This is the guy that has always opposed that. That's why the fact that it's him saying this is so important, okay? So I'm going to return to what he said. Court rulings can overstep, and they can further intrude upon the prerogatives of other branches. Courts thus speak with the knowledge of their imperfections, but also with a sense that they will instill a fidelity to law that would sorely be missed in their absence. So, yeah, the courts can screw up, but that doesn't mean that they are not an essential component of our democracy. He continues, energy in the executive is much to be respected. Energy in the executive is just it's the Federalist term that encompasses the extraordinary powers that are vested by our Constitution in the presidency and in the executive branch of government, and the ability for the executive branch to move quickly, to respond to things. That's the energy in the executive. So he says, the energy in the executive is much to be respected. It can rescue government from its lassitude and recalibrate imbalances too long left unexamined. The knowledge that executive energy is a perishable quality understandably breeds impatience with the court. So he's saying, yep, courts are slow. The executive branch is fast. So, yep, you can get frustrated. This happens. Courts, in turn, he continues, are frequently attuned to caution and are often uneasy with the executive branch's breakneck pace. And the differences do not end there. The executive is inherently focused upon ends. The judiciary, much more so, upon means. What he's saying is the executive branch is often just focused on result. The judiciary often has to focus and remind us that the process to get to that result, whatever it may be, is in a democracy just as important as the result itself. He continues, ends are bestowed on the executive by electoral outcomes. The means are entrusted to all of government, but most especially to the judiciary by the Constitution itself. What he just said there is like the real smart guy way of saying what you have heard me express, and I think I did so yesterday on this very show, and that is courts often protect those that didn't happen to vote for the current executive branch leader. The courts protect minorities, and I don't mean that in any racial sense, though it can include that, but those who are in a minority from the tyranny, the overreach of the majority, as expressed through election outcomes. The basic differences, he continues, between the branches mandate a serious effort at mutual respect. The respect that courts must accord the executive must be reciprocated by the executive's respect for the courts. Too often today, this has not been the case, as calls for the impeachment of judges for decisions the executive disfavors and exhortations to disregard court orders sadly illustrate. That's pretty extraordinary. He doesn't name the president, But the president's been calling for the impeachment of Judge Boasberg, which got a rebuke from Chief Justice John Roberts. But that's what he's talking about here. He's expressing the very idea that we have three branches of government and that our Constitution requires respect of each branch for the others. And what Trump has been doing is not, in that sense, in accord with America's history or constitutional traditions. So that's chunk one. That's the chunk that's about three separate but equal branches of government. Chunk two is the technicalities surrounding the interpretation of the word facilitate. Don't groan. It's actually kind of interesting. Okay. By the way, the judge starts the opinion out by calling Judge Innes, the district court judge, who's going to require the production of documents and maybe even require administration officials to sit in a deposition, swear an oath to tell the truth and nothing but under the penalty of perjury. Calls Judge Innes a fine district judge. You never see that either. So here's the technical part. The government's argument is that basically the administration can stand by and do nothing. And that satisfies the Supreme Court's requirement that they facilitate his return. Well, Judge Wilkinson ain't having that. Here's what he says. The Supreme Court's decision does not allow the government to do nothing. Hello? We need a judge to write that? But he had to write that. The Supreme Court's decision does not allow the administration to do nothing. It requires the government to facilitate Mr. Garcia's release from custody in El Salvador and to ensure that his case is handled as it would have been had he not been improperly sent to El Salvador. Facilitate is an active verb. It requires steps to be taken, as the Supreme Court has made perfectly clear. You don't get to do nothing. That's what they're doing. Donald Trump saying today he's not coming back. How is that not open defiance of the Supreme Court? The plain and active meaning of the word cannot be diluted by its constriction, as the government would have it, to a narrow term of art. We are not bound in this context by a definition crafted by an administrative agency and contained in a mere policy directive. You don't get to read the word into oblivion. You don't get to read it into a nullity. Facilitate. Okay, well, that means nothing now, so we'll do nothing. He's saying you can't do that. That's stupid. Thus, the government's argument that all it must do is, quote, remove any domestic barriers to Mr. Garcia's return is not well taken in light of the Supreme Court's command that the government facilitate his release from custody in El Salvador. Facilitation does not permit the administration to mistakenly deport someone to one of a foreign country's prisons in violation of both due process and a prior court order, and then to refuse to do anything to rectify that wrong in defiance of another court order. That's ridiculous. The judge writes, facilitation does not sanction the abrogation of habeas corpus through the transfer of custody to a foreign detention center. Allowing this would, quote, facilitate foreign detention more than it would domestic return. It would reduce the rule of law to lawlessness and tarnish the very values for which Americans of diverse views and persuasions have always stood. Let's read that last one again. He's saying that the administration's arguments about Mr. Garcia would reduce the rule of law to lawlessness and tarnish American values. That's what he's saying. So that's the second big chunk. And what I'm going to share with you when we return is what I think are the most alarming, clear, unequivocal calls to Americans of all political backgrounds, all faiths, all beliefs, to pay attention to what's happening now. It is the language that Judge Wilkinson, a man who does not engage in judicial activism, that has a very healthy, well-documented 40-year career of respecting the power of the executive branch, a conservative, a Republican. The words of Judge Wilkinson yesterday that tells America we are looking into the abyss. And what he asks us to do as Americans, not directly, because he can't do that in a judicial order, but what he is by implication asking each and every one of us to do is to care about our most basic and most closely held values as Americans, if not as a country that has always believed in the innate dignity of every human being. I'm going to share what I consider to be some of the most powerful words written in modern American jurisprudence when we return. My name's Maggie Dawn, everybody. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Been covering some heavy stuff in the last few segments on this show. We are going to lighten it up at the top of the hour. I've been focused on Judge Wilkinson's decision yesterday that basically told the Trump administration to go kick rocks and that they need to actually prove that they are complying with the Supreme Court's directive that they facilitate the return to the United States of Mr. Kilmar Abrego Garcia. And I've moved on to what I basically literally got a scissors out and cut up the 7-page decision. By the way, you can read it yourself, that 7-page decision. The link to that document will be in our show notes for today. You can find those at civicmedia.us/shows. I took a scissors to it and I was like, what's actually going on here? And what I shared with you is the first two chunks, which were Judge Wilkinson addressing the political debate, Donald Trump attacking the courts and attacking particular judges. The next one addressed and dismantled as stupid the government's argument that the word facilitate means that they can just do nothing and that that counts, that that's good. Nope, that doesn't. But the real action in the decision is what I'm about to share with you. He says it better than I could, so with no further ado. Judge Harvey Wilkinson writing this yesterday, a Republican, a conservative, a veteran, an appointee of Ronald Reagan, said this. The government asserts that Mr. Garcia is a terrorist and a member of MS-13. Perhaps, but perhaps not. Regardless, he is entitled to due process. If the government is confident in its position, it should be assured that position will, of course, prevail in proceedings to deport Mr. Garcia. They can prove those things. They can show by a preponderance of the evidence that these things are true and deport him legally. But the government has conceded that Mr. Garcia was wrongly deported. Why then should it not make what was wrong right? It is difficult in some cases to get to the very heart of the matter. But in this case, it is not hard at all. The government is asserting a right to stash away residents of this country in foreign prisons without the semblance of due process that is the foundation of our constitutional order. Again, something I have been saying to you repeatedly throughout the last 2 to 3 weeks. Further, the government claims in essence that because it has rid itself of custody, that there is nothing that can be done. This should be shocking not only to judges, but to the intuitive sense of liberty that Americans far removed from courthouses still hold dear. That is his call to you and I and to you, CJ, who I just saw on my caller list. That is Judge Wilkinson, a fellow Republican, a fellow conservative, saying to you, all of the conservatives listening right now, that what the Trump administration is doing is offensive to our constitutional order, to our most basic, most closely held American values. Allowing the government to do nothing and wash its hands of Mr. Garcia would facilitate foreign detention more than it would facilitate domestic return. It would reduce the rule of law to lawlessness and tarnish the very values for which Americans of diverse views and persuasions have always stood. The executive, the president, possesses enormous powers to prosecute and to deport, but with powers come restraints. If today the executive claims the right to deport without due process in disregard of court orders, what assurance will there be tomorrow that it will not deport American citizens and then disclaim responsibility to bring them home? And the judge cites to Fox News and ABC News coverage of the president saying that he hopes to deport American citizens, the homegrowns, next. And what assurance shall there be that the executive will not train its broad discretionary powers upon its political enemies? The threat, if not even the actuality, would always be present, and the executive's obligation to take care that the laws be faithfully executed would lose its meaning. Now, the branches come too close to grinding irrevocably against one another in a conflict that promises to diminish both. This is a losing proposition all around. The judiciary will lose much from the constant intimations of its illegitimacy, to which, by dint of custom and detachment, we can only sparingly reply. The executive will lose much from a public perception of its lawlessness and all of its attendant contagions. It is all too possible to see in this case an incipient crisis, but it may present opportunity as well. We yet cling to the hope that it is not naive to believe our good brethren in the executive branch perceive the rule of law as vital to the American ethos. This case presents their unique chance, Donald Trump's unique chance, to vindicate that value and to summon the best that is within us while there is still time. What is the best within you? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back after the top of the hour.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.